Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Queen of the Empowered Soul, and I'm so excited that you took the time to join us this morning. I have two amazing segments for you today. My first guest is going to be Miss Sabrina Lam, and she runs an organization out of New York known as World of Money, and we'll have her on momentarily. And afterwards, at 11 a.m., my guest will be Dr. Carlton Highsmith out of the Hamden area here in Connecticut. This morning, I am announcing out of New Milford, where we are experiencing a sunny morning, a beautiful sunny morning. It's a bit cold, but you know, I'm still excited because I'm alive to tell you what I'm experiencing. I pray that wherever you are this morning, you are enjoying the blessings of being alive today. I want to remind my listeners that you can call when you feel moved to with your question during our conversation with either guest. And the number to call is 646-915-8166. Again, the number is 646-915-8166. And very soon I'll get the chat room up and running so you can join us in there as well at blogtalkradio.com/Daphne. It's D-A-P-H-N-E hyphen Clark with an E. Hyphen H-U-D-S-O-N. And I want to tell you to remember to check my website at www.clarkhudson.com and support us there, as well as a few of my associates and affiliates. Support us there. And I want you to block these dates out on the February the 18th through the 21st, some of my associates and colleagues, we are putting on a vision conference here in Connecticut at the Crown Plaza in South Barry. And that conference is to help you to just have a clear vision of where you are looking to go with your businesses and your careers, and tell you some of the advantages about joint ventures and all of that, because no longer can we succeed as a lone ranger. We have to learn the importance of partnering and adding value to each other. So I want you to save the date. We are looking for advertisers. We are looking for vendors. And in another few days, we'll have all the information up where you can take advantage of the early bird registration and just come there, have a wonderful time, and revisit your vision, your mission, and your goal, and, you know, just set yourself up for an abundant success. So, without any further ado, I would like to welcome my distinguished, honored guest, Miss Sabrina Lam, Director of World of Money. Sabrina, good morning.
Good morning, Daphne. How are you today? Oh, actually, you sound fantastic. How could I ask that question?
Oh, thank you, thank you. Isn't it amazing every day when we wake up and we see the rising of the sun?
The blessings start then.
Yes, because we realize that a lot of people did not have that opportunity.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I don't take anything for granted. You know, I sing the praises of social media. Because you and I, we have not physically met.
Mm-hmm.
But because of social media, I was able to be exposed to what you're doing and the investment and the legacy that you are creating in the future adults. And with that being said, I said, I must get this lady on the show. She's doing a phenomenal job with young people. So thank you. I know you're busy this time of the year, and I thank you for taking the time out to spend with me this morning.
And thank you for the invitation, Daphne.
Pleasure, pleasure. Sabrina, would you please, before we get into what you're doing right now, would you just introduce yourself to the listeners? Tell them as much as you want them to know about you.
Well, I would say that I'm a creative person.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to establishing worldofmoney.org, I had a life, and I still do actually, as a writer, as a stand-up comic, as an actress, as a producer, as a filmmaker. But I always wanted to do more. I've done, and I continue to do media commentating, particularly speaking about culture, politics, and so forth. I have a career in radio, having hosted and co-hosted at various radio stations here in New York City. So I have a varied background. I also started a business for singles called FlirtingTime.com. Some people know me as that, and the goal was to connect single men and single women together in a non-pressured situation, and enjoyed that for about 5 years. So I come to this microphone, Daphne, with a creative life, a business life, a publishing life, as well as a life in broadcasting.
Oh, so, Sabrina, let me retract. Did we meet at Renee's book reading?
No.
Okay, because you said that and I'm saying, no, she looks different in the picture than the person I met. Because I thought you were at that reading when Renee had her her new book launch. So I'm accurate in saying that we have never physically met, but our spirit is so connected.
Yes.
Yes, so people hear the many things you do, and they're probably saying, oh, my God, how can she do so much? But you know something? We can all do that and do more, because when we are passionate about what's happening around us, we are not waiting for somebody else to create that change. We are taking a stand to make a difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If we don't do it, who else will? You know, I mean, my mindset throughout my life, Daphne, has not been, well, what can someone else do for me, but what can I do for myself? I'd never wanted to live the life where the power for my destiny or my direction would be in the hands of anyone, you know, my loved ones, my friends, the government, anyone. And I think a tragic life is one that for a person who lives with regret. Wow, I wish I could have. I wish I should have. If only I had. What a tragic way to live and a tragic way to think. When really, as Adam Clayton Powell said in his most famous speech, it's in your hands. The power is in your hands.
Exactly. You know, like my mentor and friend, Dr. Miles Monroe, says on numerous occasions, He said the richest place in this world is the graveyard.
Wow.
Because there are so many unlived dreams and visions mm-hmm. buried there, because people are doing exactly what you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
No one tend to say, Sabrina, it's my responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
It is always the government
mm-hmm.
or the system
mm-hmm.
or the dog or the cat or the neighbor next door. But not very many people step up to the plate and say, hey, I want to make a difference.
Well, I mean, and sometimes, you know, there will be people that don't frame it in that way in terms of making a difference. They just want to live their life. They want to go to work. They want to go home. They want to raise their children and so forth. And, of course, that's absolutely great. And you can create value in doing that. But just to live a life unconsciously, and just being somewhere you don't want to be, around people you don't want to be, and have, you know, muffled or destroyed the dream you had when you were 4 years old, or allow people to snatch that from you, I think is tragic. And I think it's time for all of us to hit the reset button, particularly going into the new year.
Exactly. I'm glad you say that. As a matter of fact, next, the last Wednesday and my last episode for this year, we are having a panel on this show of some of the experts that have been on the show during the year. And we are going to be talking about positioning for a relaunch in 2010 and beyond.
Mm.
Because there are too many people who have become complacent where they are.
Mm.
And their feathers need to be ruffled so that they can really go into 2010 and beyond, making the difference in their lives that they want, knowing that they have the power to rewrite the script of their lives.
Well, I think complacency is dangerous.
It is.
It's dangerous, it is. And it's annoying.
It is. You know, there's a dear friend of mine. I'm not going to call her name, but I love this woman dearly. And she and I met for a brief coaching session last week, and I gave her certain activities to do based on the goals that she's looking to accomplish. And 4 days went by, 5 days went by, I didn't hear from her. I put a call in. And she said, well, I have to be honest to you, I'm not going to do the activity because it hurts. I said to her, well, then, that's where you are, until you decide to take action, that's you're going to be just where you are.
Mm.
And she's a lovely person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But she got to take action.
Well, that's, you know, some individuals are not prepared to be liberated in that way. You know, action, you know, denotes freedom and power. And it's, and if you think about it, it's just really, really easy putting your life in someone else's hands.
That's right.
It just makes it, if you think about it, it just makes it easier. Well, if Daphne Clark Hudson, if she doesn't call me back, or if she doesn't help me, or if she doesn't give me this, or if she doesn't give
that,
then I can't be that. And it's all her fault.
Exactly.
It's easier to live a life that way.
That's right. Because she said to me at the end of the session, well, I thought you were going to tell me how to do it. I said, no, I cannot tell you what's inside of you. I can extract it, put it before you, and you prioritize and use what you want to use. Well, it was very interesting to hear that. You know, I can see, Sabrina, we are having such a good time. The next time you're on, I think we're going to have to do a double episode. Well, why don't we fast forward to World of Money?
Okay.
Explain to people about this organization. How did it come into being?
Mm. Well, I was attending in 2005, the fall of 2005, I was attending a financial workshop of some kind in New Jersey for my own education.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, I will also say that I've always volunteered with children in terms of, you know, whether it's, you know, nurturing border babies who have been abandoned at Harlem Hospital, or mentorship or what have you. But anyway, I was at this financial workshop, and it was day two, and I noticed, and it was a predominantly Caucasian crowd, and I noticed many of them had their children with them. And sometimes you get the most powerful information with a whisper.
Mm-hmm.
And this whisper said to me, and I've never had this occur to me in my life, Daphne, this whisper said, what a different world it would be if children who look like you got the same information.
Powerful.
And it just settled with me, and I went home and I just started doing research on financial education. I never worked on Wall Street. I'm not a financial advisor or planner, none of that. I am being moved in a power, a universal power is moving my life, is orchestrating my moves, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started doing the research and saw that there were excellent programs throughout the country, and they weren't accessible for location for New York City, tri-state area children, or they weren't accessible in terms of cost, because some of them cost about $1,000 for a week.
Mm-hmm.
Or they weren't intensive in terms of the length of their programs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to put together my own template for World of Money. I wanted it
mm-hmm.
to be accessible
mm-hmm.
so that we could stem the tide of generational impoverished thinking in our community,
mm-hmm.
That we could accumulate a financial legacy, set
mm-hmm.
a financial legacy in our family,
mm-hmm.
and that this information could be accessible to children, whether they were homeless children or they were from, upper middle class families.
Affluent. That's right. That's right.
So that 5 months later, the World of Money had its first training institute in New York City, Manhattan, and there were 35 young people that signed up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most I know what they thought because they put it in their impact statements, but the impact on my life was it just opened up a whole new world. There's a world, there's different kind of worlds. And,
that's right.
People will say, well, money's not everything. And it's usually people who don't have any money who say that.
Amen. Amen.
Okay. Or they think it's someone else's job to give them money. And
mm-hmm.
our community, when I say our, people of color, black, Latino, what have you, there's a specific idiosyncrasy that I remain troubled about.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an impoverished, toxic relationship, Daphne, with money.
Mm-hmm.
I will see people who claim they have no money at Walmart for that red light special at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Tell me about it, because they have their priorities all wrong.
Correct. They have the money. They do not have a college fund for their children. They don't have a will prepared. They do not have insurance policies. They do not have mutual funds, but they're at Walmart to get that one television competing with 1,000 other people.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so this idea of, because I've traveled the world, I'm sure you have as well.
Not quite yet, but I'm working on it.
Okay.
I've not traveled as much as I ought to.
Well, I've spent time in Europe. I've spent time in Egypt as well as Brazil, and I've seen poverty. I have seen United States of America is no way close to having poverty. There's a poverty mindset,
mm-hmm.
but when you have children in Brazil, when it's not, if you don't show up to school, no one's going to come looking for you. When you see bands of children
mm-hmm.
raising themselves on the street of Brazil, and it's not illegal if you do not go to school,
and the only
thing they want is a pencil, miss. Do you have a pencil so that I could go to school?
Sabrina,
there's a change has to occur with our thinking.
Yeah, because you say that, and I tell you, I'm from Jamaica, West Indies.
Okay.
So you are talking, right now you're in conversation with one of those children that grew up barefooted, walking to school, barefooted.
Mm.
I am from a farming family.
Okay.
So I am here in the United States. and getting grasp of the opportunity that's here. Mm-hmm. But I'm one of those children that grew up in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my parents did not have a bank account. They lived from crop, harvesting of crop and raising animals and all of that.
Mm.
But the one thing my mother planted in my mind, and although she died when I was 13 years old, I could hear her voice clearly in the back of my mind, you must go to nursing school.
Mm.
You must go to work in school because you must go to nursing school. My mother was an asthmatic.
Okay.
And I used to stay home and from school to help her when she's sick because my father went to the field.
Mm-hmm.
And she always tell me, she programmed me, Sabrina, she said, you are going to be a good nurse when you grow up, she said.
Mm.
The only thing is that you are going to be wearing a uniform and a cap.
Wow.
And you are going to get paid. So I knew if I did not become a nurse, I would be putting off what my mother wanted me to be. And I became a nurse and then built myself to where I am today. So I didn't have to travel to other countries to know poverty. I experienced it personally.
But see, in your story, I don't hear poverty, Daphne. I hear affluence. Because the affluence was the way your mother thought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? She directed you to a field of service, a professional field that, you know, is still in demand today.
Exactly.
So no matter what she had or what you did, I still hear an empowered way of thinking that your family, your parents had. And that's what I'm not seeing. We need to see more of, rather.
Exactly. And this is why, you know, when I read about the world of money, I was so excited about it because I know women my age today who do not have a checkbook for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Their husbands or their significant other, their partners have that.
Mm.
They have no control over it. They don't know what writing a check is about.
Mm.
So when I see somebody who is investing in our young people, I get excited about that because it is well needed.
Sure. Well, it's the children, because when I first created the organization, Daphne, I was told, well, you know, black children are not going to be interested in that. They just want to play basketball or baseball. And these were black people who were saying that, okay?
Yep.
And because I live my life not listening or needing a permission or affirmation from anyone else, I do what I want to do. And so the response from our children will just bring tears to your eyes. I'm thinking of 17-year-old Monica, who, you know, her whole world was opened from our seeing our presenters who, you know, leave their professions or jobs or businesses to come and teach these children everything from wealth mindsets to mutual funds, discipline saving, budgeting, you know, everything you need to know about the world of money. And she's saying to me, you know, Miss Lamb, I never even knew about this world, and I never thought that black people were affiliated with the world of money at all.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to piggyback on something you said earlier on about that workshop you were in New Jersey. And I remember you mentioned about the Caucasian kids in that workshop with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference other ethnic and cultures do with their children. They involve them in money conversation.
Yes.
We put our kids away from the table when we are discussing these things.
Yes.
And this is why they have no understanding about money.
Well, you'll hear black parents say, well, you know, my child must think money grows on trees. Well, that you didn't teach them where it did come from.
That's right.
So where else would it come from? Or they think of money bags. Well, where have you taught them the source of money? And the other thing is during that time when I was creating World of Money, there was an Ameritrade commercial running. It's not airing now. But the premise of the commercial was, you know, a white teenager came in and asked her father, "Hey, Dad, can I have $80 rather for some?" And he says, "For what?" She says, "For jeans." He said, "Are all your friends wearing the jeans?" And so she said, "Yeah." So he went, "Hmm," and he walked over to his laptop computer. She sat down next to him. He went online, bought stock in that jean company under her name, then gave her $80. So in that one, you know, action, she became not only a consumer, but she became an owner, an investor. And unfortunately, you know, our community, if you combine, you know, the black community with the Latino community, we're talking upwards in over $1 trillion that are spent out of our community a year. And so we have the money, but we are intent upon spending it and on things that have no value. If you look at the top 10 items that are spent in American and black and Latino households, they're on items that are not worth anything. The resale value is nothing. But if we took that $1 trillion and invested in institutions, if we invested in real estate, we would set a strong, empowered financial legacy for not only ourselves but our children. The whole world would change if that $1 trillion was applied elsewhere.
Exactly, exactly. You know, William R. Patterson, he's the author of The Baron's Son, and he has a similar story of how he got into investment too. He actually wanted a sneaker, and then his father asked him, which was more important, the sneaker or getting a stock in the company? And it changed his entire mindset, and now he is changing the world over about money. So I am happy that there are people like you and William and the thousands others who are helping to change the outlook of our children. Because, you know, Sabrina, you could have, the spirit, although the spirit spoke to you in that workshop, you could have looked there and you could have created all the excuses why you weren't qualified to carry out that vision. But you knew that you got the whisper, and there were enough people in New York City to help you solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you went to work and you got busy on doing that.
Correct. Correct. You know, and that's what one needs to do. You need to set, you know, your determination for whatever it is. And the attitude has to be, no matter what, this is going to happen. I would say to, you know, local officials when I would go and looking for, you know, a location, look, this is going to happen with or without you. That's
exactly.
Just my attitude. It's going to happen in my living room, or it's going to take place at a high school. One of the two. Doesn't matter to me.
Exactly. Exactly. Take action, and I love that word action, because I was speaking to another radio host yesterday down in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
and he was telling me how hectic his year is going to be. I said, no, your year does not need to be hectic. You need to delegate. I said, God give you the vision, and you need to sit at the head of that table and delegate, because so long as you sell your vision to people and they see where it is adding value, they will buy in and they will help you to bring that vision out. So just know that you are never alone. There are people there who want to help you, so long as you are about doing God's business and adding value to others.
Absolutely. And the action, the angels appear only when you take action. Lots of concentrated, focused, determined action. It doesn't come, well, I just made a phone call, nothing happened. you have to set what the, you have to embrace what the outcome is going to be, and that's when, you know, the angels appear. Many of the people that are affiliated either through board members or the parents advisory board or the financial presenters, I didn't know them prior to 2005, but they just came out of the universe and said, I heard about this, you know, the strong, we have a strong word of mouth, you know, I heard you on the radio, what have you, and I want to invest in our children in this way.
Get, you are just sitting at your house with that plan and say, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. Nobody would know about it, but you went out there and you sound the timbrel. You let people know. And
right.
As long as you are excited about it, it's going to become contagious.
Absolutely. And Daphne, I think it's important that, you know, I think the other adjustment that one needs to make, because maybe someone listening to the show right now is, has their own dream, their own nonprofit organization that they want to, you know, start or launch in the new year. I think it's also important not only with the no matter what, but when you go to people, it can't be with a beggar mentality.
That's right. That's
it
right.
Has to be with, you know, this is the kind of value that I can share with you,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to can you gimme, gimme, gimme.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And I'm already standing on my own 2 feet. And it's what I remember going to an entertainment conference years ago, and Robert Townsend was asked by 1,000 people almost, can you help me get my film, you know, greenlit in Hollywood? He says, look, I'm trying to get my own. Once you green light your own film, meaning you get out in the streets and start shooting it, that's when everyone wants to get on board. But when you're just thinking about it and it's just in your mind and that kind of thing, no one shows up.
That's right. Adding value is what it is all about.
Correct.
We were having that same conversation last. Oh, man, I have a lot of conversations. somebody else was asking somebody else about, you know, how to get. Maybe you can give me some pointers about how to get into corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped her right in the middle. I said, that's not what it's about.
Mm.
I said, why don't you try and add some value to what she's doing?
Right.
And who knows what you're going to learn in the midst.
Right.
It's not always about you.
Right.
Because if I'm adding value to you, it's going to come back to me. And she said, oh, you know, you're right. Because a lot of time, our tunnel vision is going in the wrong direction. It's
mm-hmm.
only coming back to us.
Mm-hmm.
We need to let it go out. It needs to filter out. Sabrina, we have 27 minutes remaining.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you, website, contact information, and all of that. Is the program only geared, or does it only accommodate children from New York, or it's from the tri-state?
Oh, it's from the tri-state. I mean, we've had children from as far away as Pennsylvania.
Okay, great.
And in April of 2010, we will have our orientation, a mandatory orientation where parent and child needs to come and to hear about the details and what's expected. It's not a babysitting service. It's where one comes to learn and, you know, you're tested and you're empowered in so many ways for the summer session. And also in February of next year, Daphne, we believe that it's so critical that children learn philanthropy at an early age.
Yes.
So we're going to, World of Money Children and supporting organizations will be collecting at minimum 1,000 pairs of shoes to deliver to children in Haiti.
Oh, what a blessing. What a blessing. What a blessing. Well, you know, let us know here how we can...
Oh, yes. And so in terms of contact, you just visit worldofmoney.org. And the email address is info@worldofmoney.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter.
Okay.
And MySpace.
All right. And because I'm not multitasking, I didn't type that in the chat room, but... we will repeat it later on. And I want to remind the listeners to please call in. The number is 646 915-816-6 if you have a comment or a remark for Sabrina. If you are listening and this organization has indeed made a difference in your life as a family, we want to hear about it. Because one of the other things that we as a people do not do, we do not compliment and highlight and lift people up enough when we see that they are doing wonderful things. So I want to have you start today. If you're listening and World Have Money has made a difference in your family's lives, or if you know someone whose lives it has made a difference in, we want to hear about it. And the number to call is 646-915-8166. And of course, I'm in conversation with Miss Sabrina Lamb, and she's the executive director of World of Money in New York City. Yes, Sabrina. So we know you're doing orientation for the summer program. Let's talk about the duration of the program for someone who gets accepted in the program.
Sure. It's 3 weeks. We have three different sessions, Daphne, from Monday through Friday, and then we have three field opportunities. This past summer we visited Washington, D.C. Why was that important? Children needed to see where financial decisions were made about their lives and about this country. So we visited the Financial Services Committee room, where hearings are made on everything from consumer services, consumer information, and credit cards. We also, of course, visited the White House. We also open or close a NASDAQ stock exchange. We do the opening bell.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, it's required that that they participate in a real estate tour. Why is that important? Children need to understand early how to assess or a value for a property, so that when they become of age and can buy property, it won't be such an intimidating experience, because in class they've learned everything from what a mortgage looks like, a lease looks like, what is the difference, why ownership in real estate is very important. And also, it's very, very important for children and adults, but since our mission is for children, it's very important that they learn supporting their community. Anything they want, any complaint they have about their community, they have the power to change it. If your community is filthy, then get a broom. Don't wait for your mayor to do it. You do it. They participated in different community services. They delivered Meals on Wheels to seniors. They clean up parks. They did so many things over the summer, and that's all part of the curriculum. They must give back.
Yes. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. I like that, because you just mentioned earlier on about, although the service is for children, but I know that these children are changing the way their parents do business.
Yes.
Each of the kids that attend that program, it's not business as usual at home. Because I remember on your YouTube video, I watched it, and that young person was teaching the parent about shopping, comparison shopping, using coupons and all of that. And I was so proud. I said, my God, out of the mouth of babes.
Well, the children are told at the orientation is that, and throughout my interaction with them, is that children must become the financial leaders of the family.
That's right.
They must change the every day they go home with an assignment to have a particular discussion with their parents. For example, your child may come in and say, we need to discuss the credit report, the FICO score, and how we can improve it. Because children are the mindset now, my role in this family is to take every nickel that comes in the door and leave with it and spend it on nothing. But they only know that because that's what they're taught from the behavior of adults. But giving them the power, saying, look, I'm the financial leader. I want to keep money in this house. Because we show children, and they meet children, Daphne, who are millionaires now, who look like them.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do it through being a rap artist or an athlete. They meet, and we want to make sure you hear me. They meet young people who look like them who are already millionaires or multimillionaires.
That's right. That's
so we show them the template or the plan in which they need to do it. If you start now, get interest in banks with compound interest and so forth, investment properties and so forth, you can do the same thing. You're no
That's
different.
Right.
The only
That's
thing
right.
that needs to change is how you think.
That's right. You don't have to be an athlete, but I don't have anything against them, but if you have the right training and mindset, you can do the same thing to become a multimillionaire. I remember, I think it was about 3 years ago, and I don't have his name here with me, but I'm sure you know about him. I was at a FraserNet event up in Jamaica, Queens, and this young man came to me. And he was very short, because when he told me his age, I was looking at him. I thought he was like maybe 10 or something. You know, he's tiny. But he was short, and he was looking up at me, and he was introducing to me about he's doing 3 different businesses. He was there with his teacher. And he gave me his business card, which was typed up. He didn't have a real business card. So I said to him, well, you know, I do not live in New York. I live in Connecticut. And I said, if your parents or your teacher can take you to Connecticut, I have a cable TV show that I would like to get you on. Well, we tried to work that out. It never happened. And a few months ago, I was looking at, I think, the Wall Street Project. I forget that. I think that's the name of the show. And the young man was on there talking about launching a trunk sale out of Macy's with his new designer ties.
That's right.
I don't know if you know the young man I'm talking about.
No,
and
don't.
I got so excited and I was applauding. I said, I know that boy was going somewhere when he spoke to me.
That's right. He was given the tools at a young age.
That's
and
right.
Children are innately, Daphne, competitive and creative. If you tell them what the outcome of their behavior will be, because they, of course they can't see it at being so young,
That's
they
right.
are all on board and trying to have as much money as possible. And you should also know, Daphne, that we created this year the World of Money Youth Business School for our graduates who want to move to the next level and creating their own businesses. Within 30 days, these children have created their own businesses from a Johnny's bicycle repair, from Imani's, what she's doing in terms of hair styling for her friends, to another young lady who is doing styling for clothes for her peers and making money from it.
Exactly. Because this young kid, I thought he started like some travel online, whatever it was. And now he's into designer, designing ties and everything. And he had his little windbreaker over his clothes.
Right.
But I look, he had on a casual khaki pants. And then he was saying to the host on the show, you see me with my cap backways on my hoodie here? But he said, when I zip it down, look at me. He has his nice dress shirt underneath with his tie.
That's right.
He knew he was a businessman even though he was going to school.
That's right.
You know?
That's
and
right.
I was so excited about him, and we need to encourage our children. I had a young man by the name of Rafi. He's out of Brooklyn. I met him at that business boot camp Andrew Morrison had for children back, I think it was back in March or something. And that young man has a learning disability. And he shared with me, he came up and he was on my TV show. And I was listening to all the business ventures he was involved in. I know he had an invention. He was looking for funding to launch. And I asked him, Sabrina, so can you tell me the first business that you enter into? And he laughed hysterically and he said, I don't really know if I should be saying in this on national TV, he said. I said, yeah, go ahead. He said, oh, you sure you want to hear? He said, my first business was selling homework. I said, what do you mean? He said, yeah, because I have a learning disability, But then there were kids in my class who was lazy,
mm-hmm.
who didn't want to do their work, and they know I was good at doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them they had to pay me.
Mm-hmm.
So he was pulling in like $1,000 a week tax-free.
That is I was watching this television show called on ABC called Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And a business came in with that exact business plan.
Yeah.
And they were given $500,000 to fund it.
Yes. Yeah, so, Sabrina, the funny thing now, living in New York and your mother see you with $1,000 a week, you know she getting worried about where that money's coming from. So his mother start questioning where you get the money from. So he says, not what you think. I'm selling homework. She said, what do you mean you're selling homework?
Mm-hmm.
So when he showed her all the homework he was doing, she said, well, I'll help you. So, and then she said the amount of money she wanted out of that. But then he said, realize how deep she was cutting in the profit. He said, no, I'll do them all myself.
That's right.
So he reached the stage where he was in high school and he was selling homework to college freshmen.
That's right.
And he got good money out of that. He invested that and started doing cell phone business overseas. And it was amazing. And I sat there, Sabrina, my mouth fell open.
Yes,
because if I'm using one side of my brain and I can get it. I said, when did you get paid? He said, before I give them the homework. If I give them the homework and they turn it in, they're not going to pay me.
Oh, so he definitely is a business person.
Oh, yeah, he's a business person. No credit. He got his money up front.
Well, that's just an excellent example, Daphne. We just have to stop. We have to start praising our children and really putting them in the prosperity lane. I love athletics. I'm an athletic person, just you know, as many people are. But you know, we have to stop socializing our children to
That's
only
right.
be athletes and rappers. Okay,
That's right.
because
There's
the power is
there.
The power is with the financial advisors behind the scene. The power is with the lawyers behind the scene. Those are the people that are help, you know, doing the, having the power.
Yes.
And we really need to do it, or we're going to have another generation of spending more than $1 trillion, and then we're looking for the government to replace it. Well, why? When you can't handle the money that you have now.
That's right. You know, it's interesting that you just say that, because I remember, I think it was 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
there was a panel of athletes and actors at the Fraser PowerNet conference in Atlanta, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And the athletes on there, they just express in extremely detailed way that they could not find any resource out there in the term of agents, lawyers, who can represent them, because somebody was annoyed and tell them that when they're growing up in their local communities, people are giving them the dollar and the $2 to get the Gatorade, and when they get drafted, they turn their backs on their communities and they go and they get Jewish agents and they get that. And a couple of the men say, it's not that we want to do that, but they know the value of what we have and they advocate for us to get better.
Mm.
And what I hear you saying now is that some of these same children that we have here now that you are investing in, they will be those agents, those accountants, and those lawyers who are representing our athletes and our rappers and all of those people.
Absolutely. I mean, we have to change the perception of us with regard to access to power and access to money. I remember years ago, and I was Richard Pryor, the, you know, the comedian had this album, and there was one phrase he said, you know, I don't want you going down there messing with no Jews with no money. You know, it's a hysterical, time-honored statement, you know, that the Jewish community, and there's this excellent book by a rabbi called Thou Shall Prosper.
Yes.
And it's and he lays out why the Jewish community is so adept in handling money. Mm-hmm. What's in their mindset? Their mind, in their mindset, it is their honor, it is their duty, Daphne, to give each other, to pay for each other's services.
That's right.
How many times in our community you hear, you know, well, can I get a hookup? Can I get a discount? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's everyone talks about a recession. There's been a depression in our community because of our refusal. To pay for each other's services.
And support each other. Yeah, you're right. The Asians do it. Oh, black people, and I'm saying it loud and clear on the radio, and I mean, I'm not that I'm hating on anybody. We have issues with supporting each other's service. We want discount, or we want it for free, or we sign contracts and we don't come back to pay them. So, you know, we got with the new year coming, we have to evaluate self, because you can only attract prosperity when you operate in a prosperous mentality.
Totally. We also teach children about operating integrity, with integrity about money. You know, you talked about a contract. If, you know, I, you know, sign a contract to pay you XYZ and then decide that I don't want to for just because I don't want to, that's living with a lack of integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, nothing of value will ever come to you living in that way.
That's right.
So
that's
some adults, right. Daphne, may not get that point, but mm-hmm. children get it.
Exactly. They get it, and I'm so happy that they are getting it early. Sabrina, we have 9 minutes. You and I will continue in conversation until Dr. Highsmith calls in. So if you would please give your contact information one more time and then just like wrap up if you want to summarize our conversation. And I'll definitely need to have you back because you're doing so many amazing things, both mm-hmm. in your personal life and in the world of money. So I want to have you back to talk about all the many things you're doing.
Well, again, the website is worldofmoney.org. I recommend that every parent who would like for their children to attend our 2010 Youth Financial Education Institute to visit the website, to sign up for the newsletter so they can be notified about the April orientation, whereby all the specifics will be laid out, and they can sign up for the session 1, 2, or 3 that meets their schedule, because often parents travel during the summer for vacation. Also, I hope that when we put out the notice that everyone listening will donate a pair of children's shoes so that I'm going to personally take these shoes to children in Haiti. I hope that everyone that will support that. It's very important that we give. Nothing of importance, anything that you want must be given away. You must give in order to receive.
Right.
And if you would, in order to attend, I mentioned the Youth Business School, in order to attend that, you must be a graduate of World of Money. So I just encourage everyone to register. We love the children. They have such a great time. And it just turns on the light bulb for their life. And they may forget that softball team that they're going to sign up to participate in the summer, but they'll never forget money, because money follows you your entire life, and either you deal with money or money will deal with you.
That's right. And when it deals with you, it is not in a positive way.
Right.
Right. It's better you take the front. You take the front part.
Exactly.
You have 6 minutes remaining. What would you like to have the listeners have stand out in their minds around children and money?
Well, I would say for parents to review, to take a self-assessment on the subliminal or overt lessons that you're teaching your children about money through your own behavior, because they watch you.
Uh-huh.
And are you spending money because you're trying to fill your soul? You feel that you're not of value as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're in a spending season,
mm-hmm.
but wouldn't it be great, okay, exchange a gift, but have a family meeting about what we can keep in terms of money in this household. Give that
right.
a gift for yourself.
Exactly.
Have a family meeting showing your children the expenses. They don't know how much the phone bill is every month. They don't know the mortgage or the rent. They don't know because you have not taught them. And it's so many parents have told me having conversations with their children about that, it changes their entire relationship because a child won't ask you for $150 if they know that that bill is coming in because they know that that is needed. The lights are needed.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So, I mean, the parents who are listening, the new year is coming and they need to understand the impact that having their children involved in money conversation will have on their families.
Correct.
Because people say, well, children don't understand. They don't understand because we do not make them inclusive in the conversation around the family table.
Well, and also so that parents, there's a lot of shame in this conversation, Daphne.
Yep.
You know, some people will say, you know what, I don't know, and they don't want to, I don't know about money, and they're afraid to show their children that they don't know. But it's the most empowering conversation that you have because you're grooming your children to be successful, at least I hope we are.
Right.
And so how are they going to survive unless they know how to handle money?
Right. Well, I just want to once again commend you on the amazing job that you're doing and thank you for taking a stand and taking a lead into building future adults and for investing in all our children. And please come back, Sabrina, and let us know what you're doing and in any way that we here can add value from the New Day Show and my listeners. We are here to serve you.
And
I hope, did you get that money from the Chase Fund?
That was just the first round. They have not made their announcement.
Okay, so we'll continue praying for you that you will get it because it would be coming to a worthy cause.
And Daphne, please continue doing all the great works that you're doing and inspiring and empowering other people as well.
Thank you so very much, and I look forward to our relationship really developing in a positive way.
Great. Continue to walk good, Daphne.
Thank you so much, and you have a blessed rest of the week, and have a Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
Thank you so much, Sabrina.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yes, well, I hope you enjoy the conversation with my first guest, Sabrina Lam. We were tying up there, and I am sure we will be hearing from Dr. Highsmith in a few minutes that he'll call in. Again, that was Sabrina Lam, and Sabrina is the executive director from the World of Money there in New York City. So if you're looking to make a difference in your children's lives, you heard her mention that the program is open to the tri-state area, so you don't really need to live in New York, you can be in Connecticut, New Jersey, and she said she have had students from as way down as Philadelphia or Pennsylvania, she said. So remember the number to call is 646-915-8166, and we are waiting on Dr. Highsmith to call in. You're listening to the A New Day Show. And good morning. Good morning. Is this Dr. Highsmith?
Yes, this is Carl Highsmith here.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you this morning?
I am great. I am great. We just had an amazing segment with Sabrina Lam out of New York City, and she runs an organization known as World of Money for Children. So it was a blessed interview, and I thank you so much for agreeing to be in conversation with me. I know you are a role model for a lot of entrepreneurs and small business people here in Connecticut.
Oh, thank you so much. I am thrilled, delighted to be with you this morning.
Yes, yes. We want to start in the, from the beginning, because I have known of you and have met you and see the commitment that you have put into the business showcase here that Harl and Henry usually run, and you really, really don't hold back when it comes to educating small business people and entrepreneurs. And seeing that this is the focus of the of my radio show, I decided I want to invite you here to help others on a broader level. Let us just start about talking about your humble beginnings, Dr. Highsmith.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I'm a native of North Carolina. I grew up in a small rural community in eastern North Carolina. Population of my community was less than 2,000. My great-grandfather was a farmer. My grandfather was a farmer. My parents were farmers. So I grew up on a farm. One of the things that my family was very, very focused on was making sure that we all got great education. So we were poor by most standards that people would look at things. They mm-hmm. still insisted that we get great education.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough, even though I graduated from an all-black segregated school in 1969, high school in 1969, and, you know, sort of a footnote, when I mentioned that to my two daughters, they try to remind me that Brown versus Board of Education happened in 1954.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it took a very long time for a lot of the southern states to implement that desegregation order. So mm-hmm. I actually went through my entire grade school and high school experience was all in a segregated environment.
Mm-hmm.
But we had very, very good teachers
mm-hmm.
and administrators.
Mm-hmm.
Our community was very focused on making sure that we got the very best teachers and the very best administrators, because mm-hmm. education, they felt, was going to be really important for us. So
mm-hmm.
I sum it up, I got a very great education as a youngster, and
mm-hmm.
was fortunate enough to get accepted into the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And decided that was where I was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long ways from home. It was certainly a different experience for me. And walking onto the campus of essentially an all-white university,
mm-hmm.
Over 30,000 students, and being one of only 400 minority students was quite an eye-opener for me back in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, one of the things we try to do in that environment, you try to search out professors who look like you.
And
I was fortunate enough to find a professor on campus, and I point to him quite often as being one of the inspirations for what I do today.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Dr. Matthew Holden, and he was
mm-hmm.
one of the early black PhDs in political science.
Mm-hmm.
Got his PhD from Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a professor at the University of Wisconsin. And a lot of us who were minority students wanted to take courses that he taught. And so I enrolled in as many courses as I could under
mm-hmm.
Dr. Matthew Holden.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was one day in his class, I forget the specific course number now,
mm-hmm.
we had a conversation about power, what power really meant.
Mm.
And Dr. Holden was quite a proponent of entrepreneurship and business ownership and capitalism.
Mm.
And we had a conversation about what does it mean to really amass the kind of power that's going to be transformative, make a difference in your life and the life of your family and of your community.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about business ownership.
Mm.
And he pointed to such entrepreneurs as DuPont, Carnegie, as Ford, and Kodak, and about how those men were entrepreneurs, and
mm-hmm.
they started these global businesses that had such a tremendous impact on their communities and even the world.
Yes, yes.
And he talked in terms of, as we thought about professions and what we wanted to do, think about entrepreneurship, think about capitalism, think about what you might be able to accomplish as a successful business owner.
Mm-hmm.
And he issued a challenge to us, because one of the other things that Professor Holden did while he was in Wisconsin, he sat on the Wisconsin Public Utilities Commission, which essentially regulates a lot of the public utilities. And one of the utilities that he was regulating at the time was cable television.
Mm-hmm.
It was in its infancy in 1969 and 1970. Many of us never heard of it, believe it or not, at that period of time, because it was only technology that existed in Appalachia.
Yeah.
You couldn't get TV signals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, the state of Wisconsin was in the middle of sort of dividing up the state in terms of what cable TV franchises were going to be where.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on that commission, and he said to us, a group of us, there were six of us in the class at the time, he said, what I'd like to have you guys do is think about coming to before my commission and applying for a cable TV franchise.
Mm.
And he said, it's only going to cost you, $200,000 to make the application. And so we all kind of chuckled and say, well, how is it possible that struggling poor students can amass that kind of money? Well, his point was, think about what you could do as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, to transform your life.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when I graduated from Wisconsin and took a job in corporate America, I, of course, now that he introduced me to cable television, I watched as that technology became explosive all around the world. And I thought back to only if we had the vision and the resources to have taken him up on that offer to apply for one of the cable TV franchises in Wisconsin, how different life could have been
for you. And even back then, the resource was there, but you all probably didn't have access to that, because if you were thinking, I'm sure there would be some investors, but as you say, humble college students, you're not thinking there.
Absolutely not.
You're not thinking about that.
Absolutely not.
And I don't know if you are familiar with this gentleman, Willie Crawford.
Willie Crawford.
No, he's an ex-military person, and he is making a name for himself in the internet marketing world. His story is some way similar to yours. He's also from North Carolina.
Right.
And his professor, his instructor at the school, saw something in him that he did not see. So his instructor spoke to a gentleman at one of the local corporations where he was going to school to give him a job. And Willie did not go, because Willie said, oh no, there's no white corporation that's going to give a little black boy from North Carolina any job.
Right.
So he hung out. He did not go for a long time until it was like something keep gnawing at him. And one day he turned up at the corporation for the job, and the gentleman looked at him and said, I know you would turn up eventually. And the rest is history. It has changed his life just going into that that organization and getting that job. It's an amazing thing when people see something in you that you don't see yourself. And we all have stories like that.
Exactly. How an encounter with whether it's a high school teacher, whether it's a college professor, a preacher or a colleague, can have an impact on you. So even when I left Wisconsin to work for a large global packaging company, I never forgot that conversation that I had with Dr. Matt Holden about entrepreneurship and business ownership.
That's right.
And it was ultimately 10 years after working for a large global packaging business in various capacities, in marketing, product development, that I decided that I was going to go out and take up that challenge that Dr. Holden had given to me to start my own business. So in 1983, I started on a shoestring in my basement, my basement at home, a small package design engineering business.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it amazing, Dr. Highsmith, that I don't see those 10 years as being lost or you was working for somebody else. It was actually molding you.
Mm-hmm.
for your evolution.
That is absolutely correct. The skills that I learned, the relationships that I formed during those 10 years were invaluable to me.
That's right.
As an entrepreneur. I probably would not have achieved the level of success that I did in my own business had I not had that 10 years of grooming and being taught this business.
Yes, and the lessons you learned there, and this is what I tell people. Wherever you are, enjoy that season. Do it with pride. Do it with good morals. See the value in what you're doing, because you never know the impact it's going to have on the rest of your life.
That's absolutely correct. Absolutely
and
correct.
This is just an amazing affirmation to that, because a lot of people are in jobs now and they curse that job every day. And I always ask them, tell me, what do you learn at that job when you go? I said, you are there for a reason. But I said, the more you curse the job, is the longer you're going to be there, because you are not learning the lesson that God wants you to learn while you are there in order to move you into greater things.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, no matter what the job I had, and I had, I think it was about 4 promotions during the course of that 10-year corporate career.
Yes.
And whatever job I was doing that particular time, I did to the best of my ability, and I did exactly as you said. I was a sponge. I learned as much as I could, because I realized that this job that I'm doing today is going to prepare me for the job that I want to be doing tomorrow.
That's right.
That was the approach that I took.
That's right. And I want to encourage the listeners who are listening now live and the people in the chat room and all of that. If you do not get anything else out of this segment, get the fact that wherever you are right now, whatever position you are in, really evaluate and assess your performance. Don't wait on your supervisor to do that for you. You do that yourself. And if there are anything that you need to clean up about the way that you are doing business there now, do that, because your future success and prosperity is going to be tied into your performance right now. I want to just quickly remind the listeners that they can call in at any time they have a question, and raise your hand when you have a question when you call in, so I know you have a question and not just listening. The number to call is 646-915-8166. And I'm now in conversation with Dr. Carlton Highsmith. So, Dr. Highsmith, let us fast forward to the empire that you have then built after that 10 years of corporate involvement.
Okay. Thank you. I must admit, when I started my business, when I walked into my boss's office and resigned from my corporate career to start my own business, I thought it was going to be easier than it was. It was extremely difficult, much more than I ever imagined.
Mm-hmm.
As a corporate executive, you know, one has, you know, lots of resources to call upon. One has a human resources problem, there's the HR department. One has a computer problem, there's the IT department to call. Mm-hmm. One has a question regarding legal, there's the law department to call.
Mm-hmm.
And as an entrepreneur, business ownership, as a business owner, you find yourself having to do all those things yourself, calling upon your own experiences and intuition and hopefully wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot more difficult than I ever imagined. And the first 3 years that I was in business, clearly at any point during those first 3 years, if I had, turned out the lights on my entrepreneurial career, then probably no one would have faulted me, because it was very few contracts that I was able to garner. It's amazing that as a corporate executive leading really high-powered product development teams, we were working with some of the largest packaging or consumer products companies in the world.
Yes.
They had lots of confidence in me. And then I'm that same individual as an entrepreneur, owner of my own company, and I could not get access to the same people that I had access to when I was leading corporate teams.
Right, right.
So garnering business those first 3 years was really very difficult for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only that fourth year when I was maxed out on all of my credit cards and a little bit in arrears on my mortgage,
mm-hmm.
I was able to really have an opportunity to really show the kind of innovation that we could bring to the market.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with Johnson & Johnson, one of the largest consumer products companies in the world. We had the opportunity to work on one of their new product launches and came up with some concepts, some ideas that were far superior than any of the competition, and we won that large business award.
Mm-hmm.
And we simply used that success at Johnson & Johnson to leverage projects and opportunities at other companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really our fifth and sixth year in business that we really became a profitable business, one that the phone would ring and people would want to talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the business I ran. It was a small package design engineering business, and essentially we work with large consumer product companies, pharmaceutical companies, cosmetics companies in designing what the point of purchase packages look like, those packages that sit on shelves. That was what I did as a corporate executive, and tried to leverage that expertise as an entrepreneur.
Dr. Highsmith, I want to piggyback on something you said about the first three-four years when you were having such a challenging experience in being an entrepreneur. Would you say that during those challenging times, you occasionally had to reflect on the 10 years you spent in corporation and to really assure yourself that I can really do this?
Well, certainly, absolutely. I think for sure I had worked for one of the biggest packaging companies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And for sure, I knew I had great skills.
Yes.
And for sure, I knew our market. I knew the competition.
Yes.
And I knew that innovation was something that all consumer products companies, all cosmetics companies were going to be looking for.
Yes.
And so I clung to this notion that all I got to do is just get that opportunity, get that break where I can show the innovation that we can bring.
And
you're absolutely right. I mean, it was only that confidence that I had it right. I knew I had the right formula, the right business model.
Mm-hmm.
I just needed to have the opportunity.
That's right. And this is what I want people to hear, that there are no microwave results, because, you know, people who are working jobs and all of a sudden they decide they want to become entrepreneurs. And God knows it's not everybody's cut out to be an entrepreneur, because a lot of people start off and they're looking for microwave results. When they were working in their positions that somebody was paying them, they oftentimes would do overtime and they spend long hours on the job. Yet when they become entrepreneurs, they start cutting corners. And they forget that they are most times the custodian, the accountant, the receptionist, the manager. They are the person that holds all the titles. Yet they start cutting corners and looking for a quick result. But we need to stick it out. You have to have a sense of stick-to-itiveness when you are an entrepreneur, because you're not going to reap the sweetness in the long run if you cut it short.
I would absolutely agree with that. There are very, very few shortcuts. And so as we got larger, I was able and became profitable, and our sales grew up, I was able to add to staff. So we would employ graphic designers and structural designers, packaging engineers. And so by 1993-94, we've become a company of about $10 million, employing about 11 people.
Nice.
And it was really, really comfortable for us.
Yes.
During that period of time.
Yes.
But one of the things that was happening, our industry was changing. It was becoming a bit more challenging to win business, to maintain business, and we felt that we had to to modify, change our business model.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, we were not going to continue to be successful just doing what we were doing.
That's right.
We looked at what customers were looking for. They were looking for broader capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually looking for larger companies because they were beginning to reduce their supplier base.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking for more innovation.
Right.
And they were looking for us to participate in more points of the supply chain.
Right.
And so I really had to make a tough decision about our business.
Mm-hmm.
It was either going to shrink or we had to grow exponentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I made the decision that I wanted to grow exponentially.
That's right.
And so we started to look for acquisitions, things that we could do to augment, supplement our package design engineering capability.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The logical extension for us would simply be to go into manufacturing,
mm-hmm.
to actually produce the packages that we had become so good at designing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went on a search for acquisitions, companies that I could buy who were manufacturers, who were very good at what they did, that
yes.
could supplement what we did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it was 1997 before I was able to successfully mm-hmm. identify and execute on an acquisition. So in 1997, I purchased from AluSwiss Lonza, which is a mm-hmm. large Swiss-based aluminum chemicals and packaging business. I bought their North American packaging business,
mm-hmm.
which gave me a very large manufacturing facility outside of Syracuse
mm-hmm.
And one outside of London, Ontario, Canada.
Mm.
And a large design engineering center in Cincinnati. So that was the beginning of the real exponential growth of our business with that acquisition that I did in 1997
yes.
From AluSwiss Lonza.
You know, that's so good. And I just so appreciate you giving us the step by step. Because even though you were successful, you did not become complacent. You saw the need to keep advancing in what you do and to set yourself way above the competition. I heard you mention about the different things you have to do, which I jot this word down on my scrap paper here. I put freshness. You were skilled. You were talented at what you're doing. Yet you knew you had to remain crisp and fresh or else they're going to push you out.
That's right.
And even though you had those skills and talents, you said, in order for me to remain in this race, I got to get some acquisition. And it's the same thing now I think that joint ventures are doing for us as entrepreneurs. We got to get into the company of things that will enhance what it is that we are doing. It cannot be business as usual any longer if we are looking for an abundant success and prosperity.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. I could not agree with you more. In our business, in our industry, my competitors are all multi-billion dollar companies.
Yes.
And if I am going to remain relevant, mm-hmm. remain competitive in my industry, I have to grow to scale.
Yes.
And I mean, this is not to say that everyone should be thrilled or enthusiastic about growing to become, you know, multi-million dollar businesses, but if you're in certain industries, you don't have a choice.
That's right.
And in our particular case, we don't have a choice. Our industry was consolidating, and we had to grow to remain relevant to our customers. So we overnight went from a $10 million business to a $60 million business by that acquisition that we made in 1997. And we proceeded to get to learn how now to manage 300 employees because when I bought that division, the number of people that worked grew our entire workforce at over 300. So there was a period of time getting to understand what are going to be the right people systems and work systems and right organization, management team, leadership team I should have.
Yes.
Things that I had not thought about as a small 11-person organization, but clearly if you're going to run a 300-person, you know, $60 million business, there has to be an organization. And so I spent a lot of time in those early months trying to understand what should be the organization, what should the leadership team look like, how should they interact, what should be the sort of communications model for the business, and that sort of thing. And so I think that those early years from 97 to 2000 were important, because I think we put in place some real good business systems, a real good organization that would help me to continue to grow the business, because I was only just beginning to grow in 1997 when I became a $60 million business.
Yes, yes. Oh, you know, I'm sitting here, and I need to correct something I said in the beginning. That story I shared with you about the black boy, that was, it's Jerry. It's Jerry Long's story, not Willie Crawford. So
Jerry Long's story, okay.
That's Jerry's story. I want to correct that.
Okay, Jerry, I know.
Yes, it's Jerry's story, not that. So I just wanted to correct that.
Okay.
Yes, so, you know, it is so amazing to know that once we believe in the vision and the purpose that we are called to do, not only can we change the life or the impact of our immediate family, but we can indeed impact the world.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
No?
Absolutely.
And what if you had given up when you started in your basement and said, oh, no, we can't do this? But you had a vision, you had a tunnel vision, and you did not take your eyes off of it.
That's very, very true. I heard a seminar once, and the speaker described what vision was, and he said, vision is being able to see the end in the beginning.
That's right.
And
I think
in those early days, I guess just kept envisioning this successful business that was going to be innovative and care about customers and care about its employees. Mm-hmm. And that's what I kept focused on, even in those very difficult times.
Yes. You know, I am so glad to be able to be hearing you verbalize this, because this show, I did traditional radio before I did a blog talk, because I just learned about blog talk back in March. And I have a local cable TV show here in Connecticut, and it's also airing out in St. Louis, Missouri. And I have such a burning desire for entrepreneurs. And I said, Lord, you need to show me a way where I can get the information out to entrepreneurs that they need. And I am just so thankful to have this opportunity here to use it as an investment in the lives of entrepreneurs and small business people, so they can hear from people who are doing it and who have done it. You know, in February, we will be doing a vision conference for entrepreneurs and small business people, because there are too many of them who have their wires crossed around their goals and vision. And if you do not have a clear sight of your vision, you are not going to be able to accomplish or achieve any goals. So we are praying that that conference will be well attended, and people will really get some insights from that. So, if Dr. Highsmith, if you could give a checklist to an entrepreneur to kind of self-evaluate where they are, what would that checklist look like?
Well, I think I would first, And I'm asked this question quite often. I think for sure there's something that we call a SWOT analysis, S-W-O-T. And essentially it's taking a piece of paper and writing a big S, writing a big W, a big O, and a big T. And with the S, write down what your strengths are. What is it that you really do well, better than you think the competitor does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the key is, as you approach this SWOT analysis, be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be delusional. clearly identify what your strengths are.
Mm-hmm.
Under the W, outline what your weaknesses are. And here again, be very honest with yourself. What are those things which you don't do very well,
mm-hmm.
that are gaps in your capability,
mm-hmm.
Gaps in where you may be located,
mm-hmm.
Gaps in your skills.
Mm-hmm.
But just be honest with what your weaknesses are.
Mm-hmm.
And then write down what your opportunities are. What are those things that are available to you and they just need for you to be able to execute on? What are the opportunities that are available to you?
Mm-hmm.
And then under the T, what are the real threats to your continued being in business? What are mm-hmm. threats to your current customers? Threats in your ability to grow. That's where I would start. I would start with a fundamental SWOT analysis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then once you do that, take a look at, okay, how do I mitigate my weaknesses?
Mm-hmm.
How what are the things I can do to turn this weakness into a strength?
Mm-hmm.
Those opportunities. What are those things I need to do to take advantage of those opportunities? And then when it comes to the threats, what are those things I can do to mitigate those?
Mm-hmm.
There are things that we can do, steps that I can take to make those less impactful to my business if those things were to happen.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
That would be my initial counsel.
Yes, yes. Yes. That's very powerful right here because, you know, quite a large number of entrepreneurs are often looking for other people to assess them. And even as a coach, I tell people, I am here to guide you and hold you accountable. But when you look in that mirror, what do you have to say to the person who is staring back at you? Because people are giving their power away. And that's why a lot of us sit stagnant and has become complacent in the things that we do. Because we are not able to look in the mirror and really work on the SWOT analysis that you just give us here. Because nobody knows Daphne like Daphne knows Daphne. And I'm sure nobody knows you, Dr. Highsmith, as you know you.
Right.
So and until you can be honest about your strengths, your weaknesses, opportunities, and know the threats, you really don't know who you are.
Right.
This is very powerful here, and this is something that everybody can start to work with. So now, back in between 1997 and 2000, you hired, when you did the two acquisitions, you added 300 people to your staff?
That's correct.
And what number are you up to now? Because I'm sure you're still growing.
Yep, right now we have a little over 600. We're twice the size we were in 97.
What a blessing.
And that has been driven by several things.
Yes.
In 2001, we did a greenfield, we call it, which essentially we built a plant in Lenexa, Kansas, for mm-hmm. a specific customer, that customer being Clorox.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2003, we did another acquisition. We purchased Focus Packaging. That company had two plants. One was in Kansas City proper. The other was in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as well, our upstate New York plant in Syracuse, we had an addition there and brought in some new Flexo print technologies. So we've doubled the number of people that work for us over the last 12 years by acquisitions, by building our own plant, and by expanding one of our existing facilities.
Beautiful. Beautiful. What an example. What a role model for us. And, I mean, everyone that is listening, we don't need to be a Carlton Highsmith. We just need to tap into who we are and believe that it is possible. And the one thing they can say by listening to this conversation is that if Carlton Highsmith can do it, so can I. He believed in himself, and he kept a tunnel vision, a clear vision. He didn't have a vision that was just working towards him. He was looking straight out to see the difference he can make in the world. Because who, as an entrepreneur, you can hear say that they hire or they employ in excess of 600 people? That's a lot of food you are putting on the table, Dr. Highsmith.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that because we have Christmas parties at each of our locations, and I typically attend them. And we also have picnics in the summers at each of our facilities, and I usually attend those. And so when you say 600 employees, it has a particular, you know, image in your mind.
Yeah.
But when you go to an event, when you go to one of our gatherings, and you see the employee will bring his or her spouse,
and their
2.2 children. And it's amazing. And then you get a chance to see that you're talking about several thousands of people
who bring a friend too,
who depend upon you're making the right kinds of decisions. And so it gives you a grounding when you realize that there are that many people that depend on you. Exactly.
Depends on you. It just makes you be so humble and realize, God, I thank you for allowing me to bless so many others. You know, I was having a conversation with a lady yesterday, and I'm not going to call her name because she didn't give me permission to use her story. But let's call her Dorothy for whatever reason. And her husband has an auto mechanic shop at home. And she said many years ago, I guess 6 years ago, they came back from vacation. And her husband said to her, I'm quitting my job. I hate it. So he was working for another garage in another affluent area in Connecticut. And she said to him, well, we have all this land here at home, referring to the size of their property. And if the town will allow you to put a shop up, I will support it. And she looked at me and she said, Daphne, I thought the town would never do it. She said, I thought it's the quickest permit they ever issued. So he came back excited because he got his permit. And she said, you know, it's here sometime I cannot even get into my driveway to come down to the house because there are so many cars parked here. But she said the men from the shop, they come down and they do lunch here. And she said, I spoke to my husband yesterday, and I asked him, so how much are you giving them for a Christmas bonus? And he replied to her, I give them all a week salary. And she smiled on her face, and I said, do you realize the blessing that is? Because I'm talking to people that are working in huge corporations who are not getting a bonus this Christmas. So for an entrepreneur to be blessing families in that way, it is a powerful thing.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. I think as well, what we have tried to do in the business is to create a culture of empowerment where all of our employees feel they have a vested interest in the business, in the success of the business. We engage them, involve them in understanding what their suggestions are for making us better. And we clearly think that we have a competitive advantage because of our employee empowerment belief and model, where we really reach out to our employees and have them help us get better.
That's right. And, I do a lot of training around team development and empowerment. And I tell bosses and supervisors a lot of time, you need to understand what share ownership is about. And I said, share ownership want to know they have a say in what's going on. And they will be passionate to help your organization grow because they know that they are a valued employee.
Yes. I absolutely embrace that as a philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And as a practice of running the business. It certainly has made a difference for us and is a differentiator that all of our customers say sets us apart from the competition.
Yes, yes, yes. Because, you know, we need to see people as valuable, not as an employee or a worker. You know, people are valuable to whatever vision we have because we cannot do anything by ourselves. You know, relationships are very, very, very important.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, we only have 19 minutes remaining in our conversation here. And I remember a couple of years ago, they say children live what they learn. And I don't remember exactly how many years, you and I, we were speaking on the phone and you mentioned to me about your daughter graduating law school. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, but yeah, I didn't hear your question. You broke up a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said a couple of years ago we were speaking on the telephone and you had mentioned that your daughter graduated law school.
Yes, that's correct.
And she, when you mentioned to me what she was doing like pro bono work in Hartford, right?
That is correct. I have two daughters.
Yeah.
Alexis is my oldest, and Jennifer, my youngest. Alexis is a graduate of Duke University. She was an outstanding soccer player there, actually captain of the soccer team her senior year at Duke.
Mm-hmm.
Went on to get her law degree from Wisconsin, my alma mater.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what she had done over the years, she looked at Dad and the things that Dad was interested in, the things that I got engaged in outside of business,
mm-hmm.
and decided that she didn't want to take a job in New York or Philadelphia or Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
like a lot of her classmates did, making a lot of money.
Yeah.
She was mostly interested in helping poor people.
Yes.
And so she joined Hartford Legal Aid, Greater
mm-hmm.
Hartford Legal Aid,
mm-hmm.
and that's where she has worked for the last almost 4 years now. She,
time has gone by.
Yeah, she counsels very poor families
mm-hmm.
on matters related to education,
yes,
matters related to immigration,
mm-hmm.
And that is work that she is passionate about.
Yes,
very, very dedicated to doing.
Yes, it stood out in my mind so much, and I said, you know something, that is such an affirmation of the statement that says children live what they learn, because you did not have to convince her to do that. She saw what Daddy did over the years. And she wanted to create that legacy. And, you know, just give my compliment and regards to her. I would love to have her on the show one day to talk about, you know, the value that has added to her life. Because I know she's getting more out of that work than she would put in. Because isn't it that way when we volunteer and we add value to people, we get so much back.
Oh, that's absolutely correct. That certainly has driven a lot of the work that I've done over the last few decades.
Yes.
In the community. I'm really, I had a program called I Have a Dream
yes.
in New Haven that we started back in 1994
mm-hmm.
In collaboration with Yale University
mm-hmm.
and several of my friends, business associates.
Mm-hmm.
We raised over $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we use that money to adopt an entire fourth grade class of students in
mm-hmm.
New Haven at East Rock School.
Yes.
And we provided after school programs, summer enrichment programs,
mm-hmm.
tutors and mentors for those 56 students
mm-hmm.
With the promise that if they would graduate from high school, we would pay their college tuition.
Yes.
And I'm pleased to report that we have record graduation rates from high school. We had 86% of our kids go on to either college, four-year, two-year,
mm-hmm.
Trade schools,
mm-hmm.
and I have some remarkable stories of my dreamers. One young lady who is just finishing her PhD at the University of Pittsburgh in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
I have another young man who was a nurse, was in the nursing profession for a couple of years, decided this year he wanted to go back to get his master's because he wants to come back to Gateway Community College and mm-hmm. teach other young students how to become a nurse.
Beautiful.
So that program has provided
Beautiful.
More delight and thrill enrichment to my life than anything I've done.
Beautiful. I would love to have you back to talk about that program with possibly we can link up with some of the graduates to share their stories so others can hear.
Okay, fantastic.
I would love to do that. I just commend you on the amazing things that you are doing in so many other people's lives around the world. And I just want to just pray for God's continuous blessing.
Thank you so much. I mean, I have so much to be thankful for. I mean, you mentioned it earlier. If Carlton Highsmith can achieve some level of success, then anyone can. And I mean, I'm a poor black kid who grew up in the segregated South.
Mm-hmm.
And if opportunities can be opened up for me,
mm-hmm.
They're available to anyone. It just takes, mm-hmm. you know, a desire, a burning mm-hmm. desire. It takes a vision, and mm-hmm. it takes people along the way who can make a difference, who can touch your life. I mean, I can name so many people. I mentioned Dr. Holden
mm-hmm.
as one. But so
mm-hmm.
many people who, you know, would reach out a word of advice,
mm-hmm.
a word of encouragement,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe some financial support here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the opportunities are available for those
yes.
who have the desire and the vision.
Yes, yes. And I thank you for being so personable because, I mean, I spoke with you on the phone, and when I saw you at the Small Business Conference, I said, I'm going to take the time to go introduce myself in person. And I'm saying, I wonder if he's going to be wanting to talk to me, you know. And I went, and you were so personable and everything. I said, good Lord, I thank you for that because not too many people in your position are reachable.
Right.
And I thank you for being true, for being sincere to us. And I mean, you are just such a role model for me to watch. And I keep focused. And I said, if he's doing it, if Jerry's doing it, then all those other people, girl, you better get busy and do something. So that's why I'm here doing what I can to impact the lives of other people and to know that I have the support of you guys there. Dr. Miles Monroe is another wonderful person who has done so much for me personally to get me to understand what my true vision and purpose is.
Right. Well,
I respect and adore and appreciate all of you in my life. We have 12 minutes remaining. How would you love to summarize our conversation?
Well, I think one of the things I did for Dr. Fred McKinney a few years ago. He asked me to speak at one of his luncheon events with the Connecticut Minority Supply Development Council.
Yeah.
And he said, you can talk about anything you want. And so I decided to come up with a top 10 list.
Mm-hmm.
And much like David Letterman, his top 10 list, I closed my doors in my office one day, and I had an easel. And I just would write down the 27 years I've been in business.
Yes.
And each year I'd write down what was going on in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Remember I mentioned before the first 4 years, no contracts, no money, behind on mortgage. I wrote down all the things that were going on in that year, and I did that for each of the years I was in business.
Yes.
Then I wrote down, okay, what did you do in response to what was going on in the business?
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for each of the years. And then I wrote down, well, what was the result? What was the net of that year?
Mm-hmm.
Any highlights of that year that you want to write down? And I would write that down for each of the years. So when I was done, my entire office was papered with these huge sheets of paper that had all the years that I've been in business
mm-hmm.
and the things that I had learned had gone on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to circle key phrases, key concepts, and that sort of thing. And that drove how I came up with my top 10 list things that I would share with aspiring entrepreneurs.
Wow. Okay?
And I'd like to share, if I may, that top 10 list right
now. Yes.
Okay?
Yes. Yes.
I'm gonna go from number 10 to number 1.
Yes.
I think number 10 I had was maintain balance.
Mm-hmm.
And even though long hours is going to be, absolutely a given if you're going to be successful as an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Take time out for family and friends.
Yes.
And enjoying life. Don't forget to maintain balance.
That one is for me, Lord.
Okay. Number 9, keep an accurate scorecard, which essentially is a complete set, a thorough set of financial statements.
Mm-hmm.
Which you're not going to know if you're winning or losing if you don't have a scorecard. And so as you approach banks and lending institutions, you have to have great financial statements. So learn that discipline. Learn the discipline of budgeting. Plan as to how you think you're going to do. Compare how you actually did to that plan.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having a scorecard, financial statements, would be number 9. Number 8, embrace innovation. You know, I mentioned earlier that I knew that innovation was going to help drive the growth of my business.
Mm-hmm.
And that was true back in 1983, and it's true in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
The extent that you can come up with new ideas, new concepts, new ways of doing business, new products, you're always going to have a marketplace if you just embrace innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Number 7, I've always been a fanatic about customer service. So you have to delight the customer. That's my number 7.
Mm-hmm.
You got to make the customer so delighted with you, your products, your services, that you become indispensable to them.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6, I think you have to properly plan for and prepare for and recognize opportunities, because
mm-hmm.
they come sometimes when you least expect them.
They come disguised.
And so you can't be surprised. You've got to understand that that's an opportunity. And, okay, this is my plan for leveraging an opportunity to some degree of success. So that's my number 6.
Mm-hmm.
My number 5, and this is important. You know, in the heyday of running a business, sometimes you don't sit down and find the time to think strategically about the business
mm-hmm.
and develop a framework or a set of disciplines that will enable you to drive profitable growth.
Mm-hmm.
We get involved so much in putting out day-to-day fires, we just don't, you know, have time to sit down and think about, okay,
mm-hmm.
who are my competitors?
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing? What are some of the things that I'm going to be able to do to win customers away from them? Am I going to be able to win customers away from them?
Mm-hmm.
What are customers looking for? Do I have the ability to supply it today and into the future?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that whole number 5 is key to
mm-hmm.
long-term sustained business growth.
Mm-hmm.
I think number 4, you know, make critical choices of how you're going to sort of deploy limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
I get booed sometimes when I talk before business groups and I tell aspiring entrepreneurs who have attained some level of success that maybe they should defer on that house on the Cape
mm-hmm.
or that condo in South Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Or that Porsche 911, maybe
mm-hmm.
they want to instead reinvest back into their business,
mm-hmm.
either with some training or with some new IT system or some
mm-hmm.
new technology, because if you don't reinvest back in the business, if you don't do that, then your business is not going to grow. And,
right.
And, you know, you have lifestyle entrepreneurs who want that house in the Cape or that condo
mm-hmm.
in South Beach or that 911, and that's okay.
Right.
But
you have 6 minutes, okay?
Okay, but if you want to grow your business exponentially, then you got to make critical choices of how you're going to spend your resources.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3, have a vision and the courage to see it through. And I talked
mm-hmm.
about my view of vision before in terms of
mm-hmm.
being able to see the end from the beginning.
That's right.
And number 2, develop a reputation for integrity and honesty.
Mm.
Because like it or not, your reputation is going to follow you no matter where you go.
That's right. You can't run from you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And number 1, my number 1 advice to aspiring entrepreneurs, nurture relationships, sustainable relationships. I can point to hundreds of people who have opened the door for me, made a phone call, made a referral over the last 27 years, and enabled me to grow the business. So relationship building is the key to growing a successful business in my
life. Yes. You know, there's so many affirmations here. hear. I mean, this top 10 list is something we hear over and over and over and over again. But a lot of times we turn a deaf ear to that. And I thank you for so eloquently restating it to us this afternoon. I greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate it. I want to thank you for investing in my listeners, people who are listening live and people who will be listening on the archive, because this is will remain on the archive and people can go back and re-listen. And I pray that they will pass this on to others to listen. And I'm going to send you an email later on.
Okay.
About something I have on my mind.
Okay. Wonderful.
I know you will reply. And I have 4 minutes remaining. I want to give you a minute and a half, and then I will just take the rest for closing remark. If you would like to, please give a closing statement. And again, I thank you for investing in us.
It's certainly my pleasure, my pleasure. I really have enjoyed this an awful lot. And if there is a sort of a parting message that I would like to relay, is pretty much going to be along the lines of what Professor Matt Holden said to me almost 40 years ago as I sat in his classroom on Bascom Hill in Madison, Wisconsin, in terms of understanding that if, in fact, we're going to begin to address many of the issues that plague our communities, and I think particularly of the wealth gap that exists in our country, where you know blacks and Hispanics hold 7 cents of wealth to every dollar held by white America. If we're going to begin to at all address that, it's going to have to come through rethinking vocation, professions, how we go about making a living. It's going to come from business ownership. It's going to come from entrepreneurship. It's going to come from capitalism. And I think I point to the same individuals that Professor Matt Holden pointed to, the Ponts, the Carnegies. Those people are exist today, in Bill Gates, as an example. So we have to think in terms of entrepreneurship, business ownership, if we're going to at all begin to transform the lives of our families and transform the lives of our communities. For sure, that's going to be what I think we have to do.
That's right. Dr. Highsmith, thank you so very much for really blessing and adding value to the listeners here at the New Day Show, and for really affirming inside of me that what I'm doing here by investing my time in building and impacting the lives of entrepreneurs and small business people is indeed worth it. I thank you for the value that you have added today.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. Have a blessed Christmas, and I'm going to send you an email later on.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And I pray that you, the listeners, if you had a greater time like I did, this was a Harvard PhD course that Dr. Highsmith just gave you. So I hope you send the checks over. This was indeed a powerful segment. He did not hold back. He gave you everything that he knew how to. And this is just an affirmation to tell you and remind you that you do not have to settle for mediocrity, because you have the ability to create excellence. I want you to follow your destiny. Stay focused on your vision. We are committing a conference to that on February the 18th through the 21st. I hope I see you there. Love you, appreciate you, and follow your destiny.
What's the plan that you have for me? The place you've called me to be. Some people call it destiny. Will you let me know? What's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart?